In that spirit, I invite forward Nali Srivastava to share a reading from the words of the Reverend Dr. King.
Men often hate each other because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they cannot communicate. They cannot communicate because they are separated. An individual has not started living fully until they can rise above the narrow confines of individualistic concerns to the broader concerns of humanity. Every person must decide at some point whether they will walk in the light of creative altruism or in the darkness of destructive selfishness. This is the judgment. Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?
So, friends, I have three confessions for you all today. First, I must confess that today's sermon will not be an average one. Well, at least not in terms of format, though some of you might find my content better, or dare I say it, maybe even worse than average. But what I'm trying to say is that, as you may notice in your order of service today, I have split my sermon down the middle into two shorter reflections to allow a little more time for contemplation. We have been reflecting together on readings by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and we will spend some time in meditation guided by the beautiful music of Billie Holiday, performed by our parish jazz band. And this has special meaning for me because, as some of you may know, my father is a jazz musician. So this format with my sermon split in two lets me explore a broader range of topics, which really helps me to do better justice to the expansive and complicated legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. So that was one confession down. My second confession, for those of you who enjoy learning fun facts about your minister, is that guess what I preached on the first time I ever set foot in a pulpit? Martin Luther King Jr. That was 6 years ago today at my home church, Mount Vernon Unitarian Church in Alexandria, Virginia, just 10.8 miles away from where Dr. King gave his famous I Have a Dream speech. Yes, I MapQuested it. And my third confession is this. MLK Day often ends up being Intern Minister Sunday, along with other historically low turnout Sundays. Think President's Day, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, the Sunday after Christmas. I have countless friends who serve as intern ministers who are preaching today while their supervising pastors are away for the holiday weekend. That was the case 6 years ago. My pastor at my home church was away. And unfortunately for me, as like today, it was not a low turnout Sunday, as I hoped it might be those 6 years ago. I stood terrified in the pulpit at 19 years old, about to deliver the first sermon I'd ever written to what seemed like a crowd of thousands. And I thought, man, this is a rough Sunday to give to a newbie. And it's funny because it's true. Interns and guest preachers and 19-year-old aspiring ministers who also happen to be sophomores in college often get assigned this Sunday to preach. And it is a rough one, because whose legacy is more poignant and relevant? Whose words were more powerful? Whose life was more vibrant and touching and complicated than Dr. King's? And so, 6 years and hundreds of sermons later, my third confession is this. It is still a tough holiday to preach about for me. We hear so much about Dr. King in our daily lives, especially at this time of year. I know I have spent a lot of time contemplating his words and his legacy, particularly during my 3 years of study at Boston University School of Theology, where I received my Master's of Divinity in the spring of last year, and where the Reverend Dr. King completed his doctorate in 1955. As a student and now as a teacher and preacher of religion, I spend a lot of time studying people like Dr. King, people who dedicated their lives to fighting injustice and promoting peace. The stories of these people are captivating, and it's so easy to believe that these people, people like Dr. King, were special, more special than we are. Because who among us has spoken before millions like King, exacted dramatic political change like Nelson Mandela, or saved the lives of thousands like Oscar Schindler? It's logical to think about our own meager accomplishments in this way, but actually, this way of thinking is false, because the things these people did were different from the things we have done, but they did them with the same love, hope, and strength that we all have access to within our own hearts, because they were people, just like we are people. In the words of one of the world's most famous humanitarians, whose mission few of us could imagine embarking upon, "We can do no great things, only small things with great love." Mother Teresa. Well, in fact, while I love the message of this quote, "We can do no great things, only small things with great love," I have read in several places that it actually may be misattributed to Mother Teresa. Because sure, we could all imagine her saying something like that, but we aren't actually sure if she did or not. Luckily, we don't confront this dilemma often when quoting the sayings of Dr. King, since he was a hugely prolific and very well-documented speaker. But just as with our shining example of love and selflessness, Mother Teresa, our hearts and minds may often get clouded with admiration when we think about Dr. King and what his legacy really ought to teach us. The Reverend Clinton Lee Scott, a Unitarian minister who was born in 1887, said this about visionary leaders. He said, "Always it is easier to pay homage to the prophets than to heed the direction of their vision. It is easier to blindly venerate the saints than to learn the human quality of their sainthood. It is easier to glorify the heroes rather than to give weight to their examples." And that is why it is so hard to preach on MLK Day, because it is so easy to blindly venerate these contemporary saints. And as Hector was saying, it can be so hard to heed the direction of their vision. At my seminary, which as I said was also Dr. King's seminary, there is a large chapel in which weekly worship services are held, full of stained glass and carved wood. Maybe some of you have been there before, Marsh Chapel at Boston University. That chapel has a capacity of over 1,000 worshipers. But there's also a small and simple prayer chapel on the third floor of the seminary's academic building called Mulder Chapel, where students can go for silent reflection, meditation, or prayer at any time. I myself spent many an afternoon within the walls of that sweet and sacred room. And on the wall outside this room hangs a collection of what, at first glance, appear to be Greek Orthodox icons of saints. Each one is actually, though, a relatively contemporary person, including Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and Martin Luther King Jr., decorated with glowing halos and illuminated letters, proclaiming their modern-day, mostly uncanonized sainthood. And you know, that is rough. It is rough to look at a picture of someone like that with a golden halo around their head and think, how could I ever live up to a fraction of such saintly behavior? How could I ever be that selfless, that Christ-like, that loving and giving? Well, this thinking is difficult in two ways. The first is that these people were not saints. Dr. King was not some faraway mystic with a mysterious life who lived in a cave before the age of photography and writing. No, we have films and photographs and manuscripts from the life of Dr. King. So it can be a bit odd to see his face rendered in that icon-like style, because we know what he actually looked like, unlike those saints of old. And I know for a fact that at least two people in this congregation actually saw King speak in person. And many people of a certain age, I'm sure, probably watched him on live television. And he had a real life, a human life. He was a man and not a myth. And so when I think about King's life, it's even harder to imagine living up to his example, because I cannot rationalize my inability to live up to the life of a saint, because he was a real person, a human and flawed person like I am. So how can I, with all of my failures and flaws, ever hope to be as good a human as King was? Well, that brings me to my second point about why it's hard for me to look at that icon of King surrounded by his halo and those Latin inscriptions. It's because he was a real man and not a saint, and he was flawed. It really would be easier for us, I feel, to begin the work of emulating King's vision if we could just accept this fact that he was flawed and he failed, just like us. It has been widely reported that Dr. King had extramarital affairs. This was something I had known for a while. But somewhere between that first sermon on Dr. King 6 years ago and today, I also learned that Dr. King had plagiarized large sections of his doctoral dissertation at Boston University School of Theology. Now, at the time, they didn't have the software available that we have today that we can input papers into and which compares our work against the millions of other authors. Those of you who are or who have students in high school or college will know exactly what I'm talking about. They didn't have that kind of software back in the day when Dr. King wrote his doctoral dissertation. But in the late 90s, Dr. King's dissertation, as with all of the other doctoral dissertations sitting in the library at the Boston University School of Theology, his dissertation was inputted into that program. And it was found that, quote, and I'm going to quote my sources here, portions of his dissertation had been plagiarized and he had acted improperly. However, despite its finding, the committee at Boston University that conducted this investigation said that no thought should be given to the revocation of his doctoral degree, an action that the panel said would serve no purpose. The committee also found that the dissertation still makes an intelligent contribution to scholarship, and I agree. However, a letter is now attached to King's dissertation in the university library. You can go and see it, noting that numerous passages were included without the appropriate quotations and citations of source. End quote. You know, in a way, it was sort of a relief for me to find that out, because it really does seem impossible for me to ever think about living up to the example of a saint. But maybe I could think about heeding the direction of the vision of a real-life person, someone who was not so unlike me really, although I never plagiarized a paper. I could do that, or I could at least think about doing that, about emulating the life of a real person. How about you? I invite you now to enter into the peace of music as offered by our parish jazz band and to think about this question. What would it look like for us to honor and embody the vision of Dr. King? I invite forward Mike Fitzer to share a reading from the words of Dr. King from his 1964 Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech.
I accept this award today with an abiding faith in America and an audacious faith in the future of mankind. I refuse to accept despair as the final response to the ambiguities of history. I refuse to accept the idea that the isness of man's present nature makes him morally incapable of reaching up for the eternal oughtness that forever confronts him. I refuse to accept the idea that man is mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround him. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I refuse to accept the cynical notion that nation after nation must spiral down a militaristic stairway into the hell of thermonuclear destruction. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. This is why right, temporarily defeated, is stronger than evil triumphant. I believe that even amid today's mortar bursts and whining bullets, there is still hope for a brighter tomorrow. I believe that wounded justice, lying prostrate on the blood-flowing streets of our nations, can be lifted from this dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of men. I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have 3 meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits. I believe that what self-centered men have torn down, men of other-centered can build up. I still believe that one day mankind will bow before the altars of God and be crowned triumphant over war and bloodshed, and nonviolent redemptive goodwill proclaim the rule of the land. And the lion and the lamb shall lie down together, and every man shall sit under his own vine and fig tree, and none shall be afraid. I still believe that we shall overcome.
The Reverend King once said, "We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope." Well, most mornings, I wake up yearning for the ability to hold on to that elusive hope. But honestly, more often than not, I struggle to. I love Dick Gilbert's poem called When Life is Messy. I first read this poem in a book called Day of Promise, a collection of readings from UU meditation manuals that I received as a gift from my mom right after I told her that I wanted to be a minister when I was 18 years old. Here's a part of the poem that I really feel speaks to us when we think about Dr. King. Reverend Dick Gilbert says, "It is easy to pray when the sun shines and we are grateful for another glorious day of being. But it is hard to pray when rain and wind and thunder plague our every step and spoil our every plan. It is easy to be virtuous when life goes well and our existence is a journey from bliss to beauty and back. But it is hard to be virtuous when life assaults us and our very being is a pilgrimage from bad to worse to worst. It is easy to be cheerful when health bursts in us so that we can feel the very pulse of life. But it is hard to be happy when pain and fatigue beset us, and we wonder if we can go on. It is easy to do good when our goodness is rewarded and we feel the power of pride in accomplishment. But it is hard to do good when we suffer for our efforts and we are troubled because we have been misunderstood." Again, I am called back to the words of the Reverend Clinton Lee Scott, who said, "Always it is easier to pay homage to the prophets than to heed the direction of their vision. It is easier blindly to venerate the saints than to learn from the human quality of their sainthood. It is easier to glorify the heroes than to give weight to their examples." Man, even when I'm not being misunderstood or tired or sick or in pain, it is still hard for me to ever imagine living my entire life in such a visionary and selfless way, that the way that for the most part King lived, since he was human after all, as we have come to learn. He lived that way for the most part. And as Dick Gilbert says, it is definitely hard to do good when we suffer for our efforts and we are troubled because we have been misunderstood. It's definitely hard to be virtuous when life assaults us, and I love this phrasing, when our very being is a pilgrimage from bad to worse to worst. Has anyone here ever had a day like that, or a week or a month? I know I have. And yet, that force is still there, pulling us toward the good, drawing us to love and serve and sacrifice and forgive. And so the message that Dr. King's legacy calls me toward is this: it will be hard for a mere human to do this hard work of changing, loving, healing, and celebrating this flawed world that seems so broken and hopeless at every turn. It will be hard, and sometimes we will fail. But we will try anyway, even in the smallest ways, and that will make a difference. This past Friday night, I was riding home in a taxi after having had dinner with my fiancé and with a good friend of ours who I know through attending Sikh temple services together. She and I chattered throughout the ride, lost in some superficial conversation, until we passed by the Islamic Society of Boston, the largest mosque in New England, located in Roxbury, just a few miles from my home in Jamaica Plain. I have passed by that mosque hundreds of times, but I noticed on Friday night that the tall brick minaret was now lit up with what seemed to be a new glittering installation of lights. Wow, how beautiful, I exclaimed. I love driving by the mosque, but it's even more beautiful now. My fiancé and my friend agreed. It really did look lovely. And suddenly our cab driver spoke from the silence. It makes me so happy to hear that you like the mosque. I go there every day. I feel so sad that people do not understand that the mosque is a peaceful place and Islam is a peaceful religion. I wish that people would come to have a cup of tea, to eat a sweet, to watch us pray, and then they would understand. But most people, he said, most people do not come. As Nolly shared from the words of Dr. King, people hate each other because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they cannot communicate. They cannot communicate because they are separated. And this is the legacy of Dr. King that speaks to me today. We are called to be boundary breakers. We are called to be rememberers of the past, as well as the ones who change the future. We are called to show solidarity with the oppressed, the broken, the hungry, the persecuted, the misunderstood, the prisoners, the outcasts. We are called to move forward in intentional understanding, learning about those who are different from us so that we are no longer separated. And that's something we can all take steps forward in doing, however small, however tentative. This could mean visiting a mosque or another place of worship from a religion that is different from ours. It could mean taking a course on a religion or a culture different from our own, or even just reading books that tell the stories of people who are different from us. I began that practice this year on my long commutes to and from First Parish, listening via audiobook to autobiographies written by a Holocaust survivor, a former gang member, a military veteran with PTSD, and an inmate serving a life sentence for murder. It's a simple practice. All I have to do is turn on the audiobook and listen as I drive. But I feel it ever so quietly, nudging my own mindset toward change. I have something to tell you, and it's that I have drawn such a great sense of hope. Maybe even that infinite hope that King talked about from working and worshiping alongside the members of this congregation in the months that I have served you. It gives me so much hope that we can have a dialogue with one another about how best to express our solidarity with our Black neighbors and friends who are so often told by our society that, yes, in fact, their lives do not matter. It gives me hope that there are those among us who seek to learn about other religions of the world in order to combat hostility and the rising Islamophobia of our country. It gives me hope that here in this place, we are learning to forgive, learning to celebrate those who are different from us, learning how to love, and how to live into the image of those great leaders like Dr. King, who were not saints, but who were fragile and fallible human beings, just like each of us in this sanctuary today. I would like to close my sermon this morning with a final quote from Dr. King. In 1957, he said, "We must meet hate with love. We must meet physical force with soul force. There is still a voice crying out through the vista of time saying, love your enemies, bless those that curse you, pray for those who despitefully use you. Then and only then," he says, "can you matriculate into the university of eternal life." That same voice cries out in terms lifted to cosmic proportions, "He who lives by the sword will die by the sword." And history is replete with the bleached bones of nations that failed to follow this command. King says, "We must follow nonviolence and love." Friends, we are no saints, but we too have our own unique parts to play, no matter how small, in this process which is called healing the world. May we each move forward toward love and understanding with the knowledge that this, our religious community, is here to support us and to encourage us in this work. So may it be. Blessed be. And amen.
Jesus.